Hello, this is Terrence McNally, and welcome to another newly recorded episode of Free Forum, A World That Just Might Work. I'll be offering a commentary on the possibility of generations coming together to create the sort of fundamental change we need in order to improve the daily lives of millions and to solve the enormous problems we've created for ourselves. Then I'll be speaking with Chip Conley, who sold his boutique hotel chain at 50 and joined the leadership team at Airbnb, about his latest book, Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder, which also deals with the potential for us all, individually and as a society, when generations collaborate and learn from each other. We've been celebrating 50th anniversaries this year. Woodstock and the moon landing are probably the most iconic, and rightfully so. They represent two very different manifestations of the energy and the culture of that year and of much of the 60s. Other anniversaries, Stonewall riots, the trial of the Chicago 8, the premiere of Sesame Street, the invention of the microprocessor, opening the way for the computer revolution, and the creation of ARPANET, the predecessor of the internet, and October 15th, the Vietnam moratorium. This is what the BBC says. The peace moratorium is believed to have been the largest demonstration in U.S. history, with an estimated 2 million people involved. And that has since been surpassed by the first women's march in January 2017. Back to the BBC. The focal point was the capital, Washington, D.C., where about 250,000 demonstrators gathered to make their voices heard. In Boston, Senator Ted Kennedy called for combat troops to be withdrawn from Vietnam within the next year and all forces by the end of 1972. Well, Chappaquiddick also happened in 1969, and the Manson murders, and Altamont. It's also the year I graduated college. So what about 2019? Hong Kong, Moscow, Puerto Rico, the Extinction Rebellion in the UK, global climate strikes called for September 20th. Is it at all helpful at this time to talk about something I call 60s 2.0? I see in millennials and younger a lot of values, ideas, and energies that lose nothing of their uniqueness, their timeliness, or their value if I say that they echo the 1960s. We all know that our better angels have been in retreat. The generation that helped end a war and make a corrupt president resign lost its way in ways that really mattered. Americans of my generation have not been good enough stewards of democracy. Authoritarianism has real advantages when confronting big problems that call for rapid pivots and mobilization. What FDR could do in World War II, China can do every day. And this is not a secret. Unless democracy becomes a more successful force for good in confronting climate change, I fear that China will lead the world forward and hopefully save the planet in the process. You see, there's even more at stake in our confrontation with climate change than the survival of human society. Also at stake is how that human society organizes itself moving forward. I want us to come up with a better story, one in which we transform democracy into a social force less focused on battles between competing interests or from profiting from the game of politics, and more on solving existential problems, treating the crises we face with the respect they deserve. Climate change, first of all. Lester Brown, longtime head of World Watch, has been saying for years that turning things around fast enough will require mobilization of a scope and at a speed to rival World War II. The advocates of the Green New Deal loudly and clearly say the same thing. And we must provide opportunity, resources, and support to the people who will bring that story to life. State socialism has failed, and state capitalism is falling short. We've got to reimagine a way for more of society to feel that they're owners, to share in the wealth and the direction. Maybe it's going to be through cooperatives, maybe decentralization. And kids get this. When was the last time the United States solved a big problem? We're good at convenience and profit, though even that may not be true, judging by a lot of the young companies, WeWork and Uber in the news recently. Maybe what we're good at is promise. But we've consistently let our technological evolution outpace our moral, ethical, and political evolution. The internet and big tech now threaten our individual wills as well as the quality of our democracy. Now, why have we let that happen? Young people see that we've accepted bringing them up with a less than successful childcare and education system. And if they're able to go to college, we've saddled them with often crippling debt, limiting their ability to take chances and to flourish. A society needs young people taking chances. And if that's how poorly we've managed the asset that they and their peers represent, how short-term and misguided our incentives and our thinking is, why should we be trusted to solve big problems like climate, inequality, and social injustice, as well as the weakening of our democracy? The notion I mentioned of 60s 2.0, is it valid? Is it useful? Could it catch on? I don't know. But I think that the question of how generations can work together to restore democracy, expand justice, and confront climate is a worthy one. I was born in New Bedford, Mass., a poor gray town that had lost its textile mills to the right-to-work states in the South. My family moved, first to Texas, and then we settled in Florida, two states that were on the rise at the time. I graduated from the high school closest to Cape Canaveral in 1965 at the height of the space program. This reflection on 60s 2.0 grows out of my personal experience as someone whose high school was integrated in my sophomore year, 8 blacks in a school of 2,500, who learned of JFK's assassination in 6th period algebra and RFK's at 3 in the morning while tripping on LSD in a Harvard dorm, who started an alternative high school, worked for the McGovern campaign, lived in and out of my van for a few years, farmed organically, adopted lifelong yoga and meditation practices, and produced a documentary on Buckminster Fuller by the year 1973. The more time I spend with young people these days, the more I get the feeling that some of the questions, visions, and values that emerged in the 60s are alive again today. What I mean is the best of the 1960s. Of course, there was excess, there was darkness, there was foolishness, but there were some emergent values and visions that still have merit and that are called for at this time. Community, justice, questioning consumption, questioning competition, valuing balance, small is beautiful, decentralization, though today's tech giants explode both those in a big way. The social contract, sharing, dropping out of the dominant economic or professional system, expanding civil rights, adding LGBTQ this time, ending the war on drugs, organic and regenerative agriculture, renewable energy, learning from nature, honoring spirit with or without religion, slowing down, being mindful, money not the most important thing, war is a last resort, and our leaders are not to be trusted, not accepting what our parents offered us, and believing change is possible. Though the events and culture of the 60s were fairly global, this time our technologies make it feel even more so, with greater connection and simultaneity. The revolution will not only be televised, it will be live streamed. While the changes of the 60s were driven by culture, the middle class was doing fine, families had jobs and little debt, today's reemergence is driven as much by economics. Not enough jobs, too much debt, rampant inequality. Where nuclear war was our existential threat, today we face climate change, ecological destruction, technological disruption, and still nuclear war. So what happened to such values during and after the 60s? Some were resisted, discredited, and discarded. Others assimilated, adapted, and integrated. But where the good stuff failed to take root, what went wrong? Trump's election and his administration signals that the overpowering reassertion of business as usual following the 60s and as laid out in the Powell memo in 1971 has led to a condition where change is no longer an option but a necessity. Whatever you may think of the 1960s, many of the era's values and concerns have aged pretty well. Though nothing's perfect, many would say things are getting better, not worse. While the whole Trump phenomenon challenges any assumption of progress, it's still fair to say that in social and cultural realms, 60s attitudes are on the ascendant. Marijuana is now some form of legal in over half the country. An African American was twice elected president. For LGBTQ and disabled, strides have been big. Yoga and mindfulness are now mainstream. Burning Man may be the most celebrated, but music and lifestyle festivals are everywhere. Millennials, perhaps more than any of their elders, take much of this for granted. At the same time, I believe the 60s values that have fared the worst are caring for the planet and economic justice. Why? Follow the money. It is in the narrow and short-term financial interest of wealthy and powerful individuals, corporations, and industries to stall and prevent progress in those areas. In addition, despite the progress I just talked about in social and cultural terms, we are failing to fulfill another key 60s value, our sense of community. We lost it one technological innovation, one demographic trend, one geographic shift at a time. Perhaps we didn't notice the gradual loss, but the price we've paid for convenience and mobility is high. We need a rebirth of community. And that presents a huge challenge in a society where our pain, our fear, and our disappointment fuel tribalism instead. So, what are some of the more specific reasons we haven't solved these problems? We have too small a circle of concern. For many, it does not extend much beyond self, family, or company. And too often when it does, with religion, for example, it leads to identity conflict, us versus them. As a society, we take the short term rather than the long term view, made worse, I believe, by corporations because it's good for sales. Old industries, and this is a huge drag on not only whether we take the right actions, but whether we take them in time. Old industries use their accumulated power to delay and obstruct new ones. And with things like Citizens United, our politics have steadily become more and more instruments of that destructive strategy. We also settle for the lazy belief that we've already tried and we failed, and assume that we can do no better. We accept that we have no power and therefore no responsibility. As a society, we've grown to disrespect and devalue government and NGOs, leading to vicious cycles, feedback loops, and self-fulfilling prophecies that make their work harder and their success less likely. Okay, so if the best of the 60s are emerging again in young people, what gives me hope that we can do a better job this time, that we can achieve a deeper, more sustainable transformation of society this time around? Well, first, technology. Notwithstanding the unique challenge of surveillance capitalism as practiced by big tech, where service is free and we are the product, and where we are manipulated at the level of neurotransmitters below our conscious ability to detect or deter, notwithstanding all that, the internet, with its interactivity and inclusivity, makes it easier to reduce material consumption. Decentralization in energy, media, agriculture, in production, 3D printing, offering to make makers of us all. Stuff dematerializes, becoming virtual and experiential. And we're connected. Where it took at least 4 months to organize the October 15th moratorium, it took only hours to pull together the airport demonstrations in response to Trump's Muslim ban. We're able to interact with diverse others unbound by geography. If you feel out of place in your small town, you're no longer alone. Second, in the 60s, except for 100 beatniks in San Francisco and 100 in Greenwich Village, we were on our own. Today, there are millions among previous generations to join with younger people and support them. Boomers are older, wiser, and richer, some of us anyway, with time to get involved. It's an opportunity for us to make good on our early promise. Third, in the 60s, the leadership was usually straight males, and unless the group was of color, overwhelmingly white. Chicago 8, one black, no women. Today, there's so much more talent to draw from. Women, black, brown, Asians, biracial, and LGBTQ. Look at TV commercials aimed at young people, see what I mean. And from every corner of the earth. Two words, Greta Thunberg. My vision of 60s 2.0, boomers aligned with millennials and others, supporting each other with strategy, communications, organizing, street actions, funding, and so on, to achieve our shared goals, and in doing so, transform the country and contribute to saving the world. I want the good and informed people of this country to raise their game. And one of the best hopes I see, the Bernie Sanders campaign demonstrated the model and the Trump victory declared the need, is 60s 2.0, to capitalize on the shared values of significant numbers of our two largest generations. If such a movement exists, I want to join it. And if it doesn't, I'm dedicated to helping it emerge. I've spoken with people about this, and my peers have been much more skeptical than young people. Oh, they'll never go for it. They want to invent their own thing. They don't want to hear us claiming any credit, and so on and so on. Not only that, you see a lot of folks writing these days about what a failure the 60s were and how any nostalgia is badly misplaced. But when I organized an intergenerational dialogue at my recent 50th college reunion between my classmates and current undergraduate activists and millennials involved in social impact, both sides seemed receptive to the shared values, the threads of continuity, and the potential for partnership. When I told one young activist that I felt we in the 60s had failed, he corrected me. You were just 50 years ahead of your time. You didn't have the technology. Well, we do now, and we have each other. Thank you. For this commentary, and many interviews, articles, transcripts of interviews, and to join me in pursuit of a world that just might work, go to terrencemcnally.net, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com, all one word, a world that just might work. They're the same website. And if you want to receive my weekly email announcement of guests and issues, plus 8 to 10 articles I choose each week to flesh out the conversation, adding examples and context, sign up at my site or email me at temcnally@mac.com. You can also subscribe and listen to the Freeform podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and many other sites. You can find years of podcasts at my site, terrencemcnally.net, or at Apple Podcasts or those other podcast sites. Listen anytime, anywhere. Archives include Michael Lewis, Jeremy Scahill, Naomi Klein, Robert Reich, Van Jones, Connie Rice, Greg Boyle. You can follow me on Twitter at McNallyTerrence. And thanks to Mark Maxwell in production and George Vassilopoulos at Progressive Voices, and most of all to you, my listeners, please share this podcast widely.